Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll deal with a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin in a moment and speak with Cliff Schechter, who's a political commentator, veteran campaign strategist, author and columnist. We'll be talking to him about, in effect, the beginning of the 2012 campaign, which began this week with President Obama's address. Sitting in the audience, of course, was Paul Ryan, the architect of the new Republican budget, which will be the dividing line between the Democrats and the Republicans. The assumption is that Paul Ryan has gone too far and that there will be a backlash on the part of the Democrats. But on the other hand, the Tea Party seems to be the most active political player on the stage. They've driven the Republican Party into majority status and captured the political debate. Whether the Democrats will match their energy and enthusiasm remains to be seen. But we will explore all of those issues with Cliff Schechter coming up soon here. And then we will talk with Colonel Andrew Basevich, who's a retired U.S. Army colonel, currently professor of international relations and history at Boston University. His books include American Empire, The Realities and Consequences of U.S. Diplomacy, and The Long War, A New History of U.S. National Security Policy Since World War II, and The Limits of Power, The End of American Exceptionalism. His newest book, just out in paperback, is Washington Rules, America's Path to Permanent War. We'll be talking to Andrew Basevich about U.S. defense and foreign policy in the context of a federal budget under stress, and also talk to him about the third war that the United States is now engaged in Libya, a war that he does not approve of. So we'll be having that discussion later in the program. We're still trying to get through to somebody to talk about Saudi Arabia. The Wall Street Journal this Saturday had a long piece about a new Cold War emerging between Iran and Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia is the ultimate shoe that could drop in the Arab Spring. Very little is known about the extent of dissent within the kingdom, but it is probably much greater than people think. And certainly since the U.S. has been caught by surprise from Tunisia, Egypt, and now Syria, and for that matter, Libya, it's not inconceivable that we will be caught by surprise in Saudi Arabia when our supplier of oil collapses. And let's now talk about, though, the albeit somewhat early in the piece, the 2012 campaign. It seems to have kicked off with a speech by the president, Cliff Schechter, who is joining us. He's a political commentator, veteran campaign strategist, author, and columnist. He's the president of Libertas LLC, a progressive public relations firm whose clients include organizations run by Michael Bloomberg and Al Gore. Cliff Schechter was a pollster for the successful re-election of Bill Clinton in 1996 and has worked on campaigns for Governor Mark Warner and Ned Lamont in his primary victory over Joe Lieberman, among others. Welcome to Background Briefing, Cliff Schechter.
Thank you so much. How are you today, Ken?
Very well, thanks. And it does seem to me that this budget that Paul Ryan has put out that the president lambasted in front of him this week in a speech which many thought was an opening shot in the 2012 re-election campaign. Now, it seems to me, though, that the only people with political energy in this country are the Tea Party. They have captured the Republican Party, driven it into majority status, because only in 2008, 140 million voted. In 2010, only 75 million voted. The Democrats seem to be in retreat. They don't have a narrative. Is this budget, are they once again counting on the idea that the other side does something terrible and we then get organized in response to Republican excesses, as opposed to getting organized based upon our own ideology and narrative?
Well, let me say that, sadly, that is way too often the truth, where Democrats do rely on that and allow that to be, hopefully, to win by default, essentially. I think this time, hopefully, I mean, it seems a little different. Barack Obama did make a speech where he took on, he really drew a distinction, which a lot of us have been waiting for a long time to hear him do, where he pointed out that people like him will get more tax cuts. Meanwhile, what it would do, how people would lose their, you know, their Medicare. I mean, Medicare would turn to these vouchers. I mean, it's ridiculous when you think about people having to live on health care, you know, $15,000, and then it runs out. And when you realize what can happen, is ridiculous. And his assault on Medicaid, too, and everything else, you know. But meanwhile, while lowering the top tax rate to 25%, because if there's anything we obviously really need to do, it's to cut taxes for billionaires. Obviously, that's really key to closing the deficit. I mean, you know, I liked Obama's response. I would have liked it, you know, even more if he had just simply said, you know, this is a guy that has voted for every defense budget and two wars that have not been paid for, voted for President Bush's tax cut, voted for President Bush's ridiculous Medicare prescription bill that had all sorts of loopholes in it. I don't think this is a guy that really has the ability or really credibility to lecture anybody on balancing budgets. So I'm hoping that Democrats will continue to make that distinction.
But Cliff Schechter, this is going to take more than a speech by the President of the United States. This is going to take a movement. I mean, it's extraordinary that this radical budget that just passed the House, which is a roadmap, to my mind, to a new American plantation economy. We already have had tax cuts for the super rich. They've been extended in a compromise. So as the rich get richer, meanwhile, the Republicans are selling this deficit hoax, and they are solving a non-existent problem by cutting programs from the elderly and the poor and the children. And frankly, this kind of mean-spirited social Darwinism is unheard of anywhere else in the world. No other democracy operates this way, with citizens paying their taxes but having their services cut while subsidizing the rich and private corporations. This is
No modern democracy works that way, certainly. And it's terrible. I mean, there's no doubt that even before the Citizens United decision, we allowed way too much corporate influence in our politics. And, you know, I'm someone who, while I will give President Obama credit when he deserves it, I've been very critical in the past when he deserves it, because, in my opinion, he came in claiming he was going to be transformational and instead has been transactional and has allowed these same corporations. I mean, it's not just that all the legislation seems set up to their benefit, but he populates his very government, his very, you know, the executive branch, his chiefs of staff and others have ties to the banks and to others, and I think that's been a terrible mistake. I think it's hurt him. I think it's what, obviously, not being bold enough on the economy, which was listening to all these guys who said, oh, don't do too much to punish the banks. It's okay. You know, people don't really mind if they see people walking with hundreds of millions of dollars while they lose their job. That hurt him in the midterms. That caused Democrats to stay home, and I think he's still got a problem with his base because a lot of people are very angry. So you are correct, and this needs to be pointed out. All I was saying is I think this speech at least was a good first step. I don't believe in just speeches because I've heard speeches before. I heard a lot of Obama's during the campaign. Many of those promises have not been lived up to, and so obviously I expect to see it. And even in Obama's budget, some of the things being cut I think are ludicrous. And so if I were there, I would be pressuring from the left if I had a vote on this thing, and I'm not sure I'd vote for it. Quite frankly, I think I wouldn't. I'm just saying, you know, at least finally, we've all been waiting for a narrative to come from the president. We've all been waiting for someone to stand up and stop acting like he's above it all and saying, oh, you know, those people in Congress, those Democrats and Republicans, meanwhile, he's the leader of our party. He should be, you know, and when people like Ryan go and boohoo and cry about Obama's partisanship, I mean, I'm not sure if I'm ready to fall over and throw up from laughing so hard. I mean, these are the, you know, these are the guys. He's a socialist. He's a Kenyan. God knows every name and stupid thing this group of children, which is what they tend to act like, have called him, and now they cry because he differentiates his budget from theirs. It'd be laughable if it wasn't so pathetic.
Again, I'm speaking with veteran political strategist Cliff Schechter, but I'm not sure that the president's going to make this case, but it seems to me there's some real simple fundamentals here that the Democrats have to create a narrative about. We don't have a deficit problem. We have a revenue problem. What's happening in this country, and has for decades since Reagan, is a transfer of public money into private hands. That is the Republican strategy. And Ryan's budget locks that in permanently and to my mind, turns us into a plantation economy. So,
well, yeah, and I mean, the deficit, look, we don't have a deficit problem, but you know what? If we do, I mean, I'm someone who does believe that you should try to balance the budget. I mean, it, you know, the government should live within its means, but it's pretty easy to do so. It's simple. Take a look at the defense budget, where we've got as big a defense budget as every other country put together in the entire world. That's about right. I think it's only, ours is only a little smaller. Take a third or more out of that, and you can, believe me, you can find plenty of waste and fraud. I'll throw in a couple of terms if anybody wants to remember waste and fraud. Halliburton, Blackwater, go on and on.
This narrative, this tax and spend narrative that the Republicans have put out there, the truth of the matter is that we have spend and tax cuts for the rich. The $4 trillion that Ryan's talking about making up to reduce the deficit is all coming out of the poor. At the same time, he's cutting the taxes for the rich down by 10%. For the top bracket, they've already had these massive cuts, which were extended. And he's also calling for corporate tax cuts as well. And we know corporations like one of the biggest, General Electric, don't even pay their taxes. And this is tax time. People.
And that's the problem, because you have Jeffrey Immelt becoming Obama's job czar, and the guy's company didn't pay any taxes. And this is where President Obama blurs the lines. Some people don't think there's a difference.
But Cliff, I'm saying, who else is going to say? Somebody else has got to start talking truth here. Whether the president doesn't step up, whether he's afraid to be too partisan because he'll offend the center, and he's irritated with the left because they don't have his back and they've abandoned him. I don't care what the reasons are. I'm trying to find out here, and I'm sure our audience is concerned, that this country is moving so far to the right, it's breathtaking, and everybody on the left seems to be asleep. So where's the wake-up coming from?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I honestly would have to have you define, for me, who everybody is, just because the thing about that Obama is unique. He has the biggest microphone. I mean, the right spent years building up an infrastructure. They have Fox News. You really can't compare a couple of hours on MSNBC at night to Fox News. You can't compare. I mean, they have Rush Limbaugh. I could go on and on. There's no think tank on the left that spends close to what the Heritage Foundation spends. I'm not making excuses. I'm simply saying that you need the guy with the bully pulpit to use the bully pulpit. It is a very important thing. And, I mean, look, I've heard Al Franken out there. I've heard Bernie Sanders out there. I've heard, I was just at a conference this weekend in Las Vegas. I heard Ed Schultz giving a fiery speech. It's not that, and saying these kinds of things. It's not that nobody's out there saying them. It's that we really need the president to be out there saying them. And as I said, that speech was a good first step. But I agree with you. You bring up a very important problem, which is he's accepted their overall narrative, which is the deficit is some sort of a big moral problem. No, it's not. The moral problem is when there's millions of people without jobs. That's what's immoral. When there's millions of people suffering, when you're cutting, when rich people have done ridiculously well, when the Tea Party people who fetishize, the 1950s, well, maybe they should learn what the tax rates were back then, because Eisenhower had a 91% top tax rate. And we're talking, we can't even get to I would go with the people's budget that was offered by the Progressive Caucus, where they're talking about putting the top tax rate back to 49%, by the way, which is not even close to what it was under Eisenhower or under Nixon. And that would be one way to solve this, but certainly at the very least back to where President Clinton's top tax rate was at 39.6%. I mean, you do that, and that's the problem, is Obama's accepted that there's a deficit problem. Well, you know what? You could create jobs while getting rid of the deficit. You could make the narrative about, this is how we're going to create jobs. We're going to do what Bill Clinton did. He only created 22 million of them, right? I mean, put the top tax rate back to where it was under him, or frankly, even higher at this point with some of the billionaires out there. Cut the defense budget, the amount it needs to be cut. Stop giving agribusiness, big agribusiness farm subsidies and big oil company subsidies, and a million other things that I probably haven't even thought of. And you'll get there. This deficit could be erased tomorrow, and it could be erased while creating jobs. Because when Lindsey Graham went out there and started crying and hemming and hawing about how he wouldn't support the budget because one of his little pet projects in Charleston got cut, he actually opened his mouth, as they often do when you do things they don't like, and admitted that jobs would be lost. Why? Because spending was going to be cut in South Carolina. Oops! They don't want to admit that spending creates jobs, government spending. Well, you know what? It does. It's Keynesianism. It worked under Roosevelt. The only time it stopped working is when he listened to the conservative voices in 1938 and started cutting back on spending, and that hurt his economy until World War II. I mean, this stuff isn't rocket science. We know we're going up against people where all that matters is ideology, not suffering. And your ideology is ridiculous, and it's been proven that again and again and again. So Obama needs to use the bully pulpit. I agree with you that other big-name Democrats need to step up, but I think some have. It's just when you don't have the bully pulpit, you're losing a lot.
Again, I'm speaking with veteran political campaign strategist Cliff Schechter. But the fact that the Republicans have sold this deficit hoax, and that they have also over the years sold the tax hoax, which is that we tax too much, and obviously the debate should be about what happens to our tax money, and our tax money has been stolen from us, as you listed, agribusiness, defense, all of these socialist subsidies for big corporations. We're the only country in the world that has right-wing welfare and not traditional welfare for people who need it. So do you think that given how these canards have been cemented into the American consciousness, the issues really are about how to create a new media to get the alternative truth out?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt about that, and that is a big issue. And I'm on listservs and parts of groups where this has been debated. I spoke at the National Conference on Media Reform in Boston a week ago. And so I'm a part of this. I try to be a part of this conversation. It's necessary. We need more shows like yours. We need a bigger microphone on television because television is all important. We need more think tank funding. We need a lot of things. And that is a big part of the problem. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, and that would create the culture, I think, that would embolden at least those that some of the Democrats and maybe the president. But at the same time, there have to be people with courage. I mean, you look back 100 years and you remember, think about what someone, a perfect example, think about what Teddy Roosevelt did. Think about a guy coming out of the Republican Party initially and standing up and talking about and supporting the estate tax and supporting higher taxes on the wealthy and supporting antitrust and all the things he did. Meanwhile, all these wealthy guys helped him get to office, and he stood up and he did what was right. And think of all that got done because he used the bully pulpit, which is, I think, was named, he's the one who called it that initially, to change people's minds. He persuaded. And he was up against yellow journalism, and he was up against industrialists with a ton of money. It's tougher in the TV age because people, I think, can be manipulated easier. But still, he did it. FDR, who was called a traitor to his class, for standing up and literally saying, coming out and saying he enjoyed the fact that the industrialists hated him so much. The truth is, Lincoln, look at what Lincoln did, and look at the guys who failed before him and after him. The fact is that, yes, you need the media to be better. Yes, we need all this. But you also, every once in a while in society, you need a transformational figure who has the charisma, the ability, and as importantly, the courage to be able to stand up and look at the way things are going in the wrong direction and help and do what is necessary to turn those things back around. And we've been in this situation before, and we had it in the past. And that speech the other day by Obama, as I said, I will give credit where credit was due. It was a very good speech. But overall, sadly, he has not lived up to that. He's allowed things to continue going the way they've gone and made cut little deals that have helped people's lives somewhat. I'm not saying there haven't been some good bills he signed and other things he's done, but at the same time, it's not taking us back in the direction we need to go in.
Well, just in closing, should the people who voted in 2008 for him and didn't vote for Democrats in 2010, should they threaten him if he doesn't step up and do what they want? They won't vote for him, or should they have his back? How is this going to translate in terms of whether you support this guy or you basically expect him to do what you think should have been done and hasn't been done? I mean, that's where I want a little clarity just in the closing.
Well, I think they should threaten him, frankly. I think in the end of the day, he made a lot of promises during that first election. There wasn't going to be offshore drilling. He wasn't going to extend the Bush tax cuts. He was going to have a public option in health care. In the end, has not lived up to a lot of them. So as far as it doesn't mean try to sabotage him. Don't gratuitously insult him. Don't be vicious about it. There are people I've seen that just seem to revel in going after Obama. Well, that's counterproductive. But holding his feet to the fire and telling him our vote's not guaranteed, telling him you need to live up to your promises, no, that's what you do in a democracy. That's how you pressure people to get to the place where they need to be. And I think that's what Democrats need. He needs to whether people are going to vote for him or not, he needs to not be sure of that fact. He needs to think that he has to live up to what he needs to live up to, or otherwise maybe people won't come out for him. And to me, that then you'll get a better presidency. And you know what? If he believes what you were saying earlier, if he thinks he makes independents upset, you can see again and again, independents are looking for someone who has the strength of their convictions and stands up for things even if they disagree with them. They're looking for a leader. And so if he really is still caught in the D.C. bubble where he thinks by being a strong progressive he's going to lose independence, and then more work even needs to be done than we know. He needs to come out here in the Midwest and try to figure out how it is that Tom Harkin wins and Al Franken wins and Sherrod Brown wins and Byron Dorgan, who's won all progressives, all in the Midwest of the country that's supposed to be, you know, where only moderates can win. Not true. That's proven again and again. He stands up strong for his principles and his positions. He'll have all the progressives, their problem solved, and he'll win in a landslide.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today in Los Angeles, Cliff Schechter.
Thank you so much, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with columnist and political strategist Cliff Schechter, who's the president of the progressive public relations firm Libertas LLC. He was a pollster for the successful re-election of Bill Clinton in 1996 and has worked on campaigns for Governor Mark Warner and Ned Lamont in his primary victory over Joe Lieberman, among others. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with Colonel Andrew Bacevich, who is a strong critic of the Libyan war. Talking about